Good morning, everyone, and welcome to today's cyber seminar. This is Dr. Robin Masheb, Director of Education at the Prime Center, and I will be hosting our monthly pain call entitled Spotlight on Pain Management. Today's session is Using Positive Psychology to Improve Pain and Functioning in Veterans with Arthritis. I would like to introduce our presenter for today, Dr. Leslie Hausman. Dr. Hausman is a core investigator for the Center for Health Equity Research and Promotion at the VA Pittsburgh Healthcare System and an associate professor of medicine at the University of Pittsburgh Division of Internal Medicine. Her background is in social psychology, and her research focuses broadly on identifying, understanding, and reducing disparities in health and healthcare for vulnerable patient populations. The work she is sharing with us today is an outgrowth of her research on racial disparities in pain management for veterans, with a particular focus on veterans with presentation. Immediately following today's session, you will receive a very brief feedback form. Please complete this, as it is critically important to help us provide you with great programming. Dr. Friedhelm Sandbrink is a neurologist, the VA Acting National Program Director for Pain Management, and Director of Pain Management in the Department of Neurology at Washington, D.C. VA Medical Center. He will be on our call today and will be able to take questions related to policy at the end of our session. And now I'm going to turn this over to our presenter, Dr. Hausman.
Thank you, Robin, and thank you, all of you who are tuning in from your computers. Over the next hour, I am going to be sharing with you, if I can get my slides to advance here. There we go. I'm going to be sharing with you some work I've been doing over the last several years, trying to translate activities from that have been developed and tested in the field of positive psychology to see if they can bring some benefit and relief to veterans with arthritis. I have no disclosures. The views I express here are my own. I want to acknowledge before I get started that I have worked with a fantastic team on this work. I've got a great team of investigators and fantastic staff in Pittsburgh and Philadelphia, which are the two sites where the data have primarily been collected for the work I'm going to be sharing. And much of this work has been funded by VA HSR&D. Work focuses on the patient population with arthritis. This is a notable and significant condition to focus on, as it affects half of U.S. adults over the age of 65. Arthritis is a major source of disability. It causes more functional limitations than heart disease or diabetes. There isn't any cure at present for arthritis, so the goals of treatment are typically to alleviate symptoms and improve the functioning and quality of life of patients afflicted with arthritis. However, existing treatments often yield small to moderate improvements in pain. There is joint replacement surgery that is reserved for the most severe cases of end-stage osteoarthritis, and that is an effective treatment. However, the treatments that patients are offered leading up to that end stage are often inefficient and ineffective. This is also a condition that I am interested in given my background as a health disparities researcher. Arthritis is a condition for which there are well-documented race disparities in several ways. First of all, there are disparities in the impact of this condition. So among those who are diagnosed with arthritis, African Americans tend to report more severe pain and more daily limitations than whites diagnosed with the same disease. There are also differences in treatments, such that African Americans are less likely to receive some pharmacological treatments, and they are less likely to receive the surgical treatments that I mentioned previously, joint replacement. There are also race differences in treatment preferences, such that African Americans are less likely to prefer pharmacological or surgical treatments and are more open to complementary and alternative treatment strategies. So when thinking about new and exciting ways to approach pain management, it's important to consider the many factors that play into one's pain and functioning experience. So what is depicted here is an adapted version of the biopsychosocial model of pain. And the takeaway from this is that although there's often a biological disease or condition that underlies the pain that people experience, the extent of the pain and the extent to which it limits daily functioning is often moderated by psychological and social factors that affect patients. And many of the psychological and social factors depicted here not only can affect one's ability to cope with pain effectively, but they are also things that differ by race. And so these may be targets that not only improve pain, but improve racial disparities in pain. So I was very interested to try to come up with a new psychosocial way to target these psychosocial factors that in an effort to not only improve pain, but also to reduce disparities, as I mentioned. This brings me to positive psychology as one possibility for a new psychosocial treatment for pain. The idea underlying positive psychology is that there are ways to improve health by increasing positive emotions and behaviors. And this is in contrast to traditional biomedical models of disease where we look for symptoms, we look for things that are wrong, and we look for underlying conditions, and then we go after solving the symptoms and the diseases. And positive psychology kind of turns that on its head by looking for things that we as humans do all the time, and it's what makes us resilient, and it's what allows us to flourish amidst hard times. And what is depicted here is a theory that underlies a lot of the positive psychology literature, and this is called the Broaden and Build Theory of Positive Emotions, and I wanted to walk everybody through it. And this is something that's not only a theory, but it is backed up by a considerable amount of research at this point. But the flow here is that when we experience positive emotions such as joy, love, contentment, or just basic happiness, in those positive moments, our minds and behaviors are expanded or broadened such that we become more creative, we become more open to considering new ideas and new practices while we are in this enhanced positive state. During those broadened moments, that allows us to build up resources, specifically physical, mental, and social resources that we may not have had before. And over time, with experiencing this cycle, we are able to accrue physical, mental, and social resources that allow us to personally grow and undergo a transformation over time. And then this is a nice positive feedback loop because the more, the closer you get to the right, the transformation stage, the more opportunities we have and then we actually create for ourselves to experience positive emotions again and kind of kickstart this process all over again. So as I mentioned, there is substantial literature backing up this theory, so I'm going to share a little bit of that with you today. Positive activities are shown to improve health. There are simple positive activities that have been developed and tested in the literature. Common exercises focus on very basic things like teaching individuals to express and experience gratitude, kindness, optimism, ways to identify and use our personal strengths, and simply reflecting on good things that happen. And this is, in contrast to our natural tendencies to kind of dwell on the negative things that are going on around us. There are a number of studies showing that when we have people do these kinds of activities, we can show demonstrated improvements in mental well-being and reduce depressive symptoms. There's also correlational or observational evidence showing that those who just naturally experience positive emotions or do these things kind of on their own do experience reduced mortality and morbidity. So there are not just psychological health benefits, but also physical health benefits of adopting a positive approach to one's life. So the question that my team and I have been focused on in the last several years are, can positive activities reduce pain. So I'm going to be sharing with you some findings from my research in this area. The first is a study that we conducted using secondary analyses of data from an online trial that randomized volunteers to complete 0, 2, 4, or 6 positive activities over a 6-week period. So I know this is a VA audience. This particular online study was not a VA sample. So we capitalized on this rich data set to examine whether people reduced pain in addition to some of the primary outcomes of that work. So the sample for this study included volunteers visiting a positive psychology website. For this analysis, we restricted the sample to those who reported at least mild to moderate pain at baseline, and we assessed this using the SF-36 bodily pain subscale. Our outcome then was change in bodily pain from baseline to post-intervention, which was 6 weeks, and then again following up with individuals 1, 3, and 6 months after the intervention ended. The procedure included everybody receiving weekly emails to return to the website to complete the follow-up surveys. But those in the 2, 4, and 6 activity groups also received instructions for how to complete weekly positive activities. So those, the activities that we included in this trial are shown here. The first is a very common and well-studied activity called 3 Good Things. It's where you ask people to identify 3 things that went well each day and reflect on why they occurred, and we usually have people do that once a day for a week. Then the second week's activity is identifying and using strengths. For this, we have people complete a survey that identifies one's strengths, and then we ask them to use one of their top strengths each day over the next week. Gratitude visit is another really popular and well-studied and very powerful positive event. This is where we ask people to identify somebody in their life who has really made a positive impact on them, but we may have never expressed our magnitude of thanks to them. Write them a letter that expresses all those things we haven't said to them, and then read it aloud to the recipient. And again, this is a very powerful positive activity. And it's shown that writing the letter alone is good, but if you can also read it aloud to the recipient, that's a bigger bang for your buck. The next activity called savoring. This activity is a mini mindfulness activity where we have people focus intently on positive experiences 2 to 3 times each day. Number 5 is active constructive responding, and this is where participants are taught to how to show positive and constructive response when somebody they know shares good news with them. And then finally, the life summary is asking people to write a summary of how they want to be remembered. So what are all of the things about their lives that they want to be memorialized for? So the sample characteristics of this group, I wanted to, I know there are lots of numbers here, and these are all available in the slides. I'm going to highlight a couple of key things, and this, again, is because I know I'm talking to a VA-centric audience. This is a very different sample. So our sample for this online trial was somewhat younger than our average veteran. The average age was 46 years old. It was also a highly predominant female sample, with 82% of the participants being female. And then the last number I'll draw your attention to is the education level. So this was a highly educated sample with almost 50% having completed more than a 4-year college degree. So a lot of these have at least some graduate education. I'm going to jump right to the results, which are summarized in this graphic here. And so just to walk you through it, these are time points, baseline up to 6 months. Higher scores equal less pain, so we are looking. It's a good thing that these lines are sloping upwards. The solid line here is the 0 activities control group. So this group just did all of the survey measures but didn't do any activities. We have up here at the top our biggest significant effect is for the 4 activity group. We see that they had a significantly greater increase or improvement in pain, a decrease, but depicted here as an increase in pain improvement. We also saw a significant improvement in our sixth activity group, which is this line here. Our two activity group tracked fairly closely to the zero activity group, and so our conclusion here was that having people just do two activities was not sufficient to yield improvements in pain. We needed at least four or six activities to reap the benefits for pain. But the take-home for this is that even amidst a sample that wasn't in chronic pain to begin with, or nor was the study designed to assess changes in pain, we still saw among those who had pain at baseline significantly greater improvements in the conditions that completed four or six activities. That said, the study, being an online study, had several limitations, one of which is very common to online trials, and that is fairly substantial attrition. This was also a self-selected convenience sample, so there's a lot going on here. These are people who really, I think, believe in positive psychology and were open to this kind of, you know, volunteering for this kind of thing on the Internet. And then our measure, because the study wasn't designed to show differences in pain, they only included a crude pain measure, and so we didn't have measures of duration, intensity, or the specific source of pain. But we took this as a very positive first step, showing that pain, positive psychology, does show some promise for reducing pain. Now I'm going to transition to the work I've done to bring positive psychology to veterans. And so the goals of my research program here in the VA are to translate evidence-based positive activities into a behavioral program for veterans with knee or hip arthritis. I want to demonstrate the impact of the positive activities program on pain and function in this population and test whether the program is more beneficial for African Americans, thus reducing disparities. There are three phases to this work. Phase one is when we developed and refined our materials. Phase two was a pilot test for feasibility, acceptance, and impact on pain and function. And then phase three is a multi-site randomized controlled trial. The predominant focus for this presentation is going to be on phases one and two, primarily because those are completed, and I am in the final 6 months of the RCT, and so I will be sharing some of the results, but I'm not able to give you all the final results today. So to walk you through the first phase, and this was how we identified and refined our activities for veterans. We first consulted the literature to identify positive activities that had demonstrated positive effects on well-being that lasted for at least 1 month. We wanted to really make sure this was driven by evidence and wanted to fill our program with the most promising activities for veterans. So they had to have some evidence out there already. They were beneficial. We were trying to maximize the usability of these activities, which have largely been developed for and tested in predominantly college-age populations and college-educated people. So we know that the veteran population is quite diverse and wanted to make sure it wasn't, that we adapted the positive activities to accommodate the full range of veterans. So we were looking for those that were simple to complete. We had implementation in mind, so we did not want to build a program that required extensive training or follow-up either on the part of veterans or on the part of healthcare professionals. We also wanted to get activities that work when they can be self-administered, and then, again, getting back to the range of our veteran population, we wanted to get activities that could be adapted for use by those with low literacy. So what is shown here are the positive activities that we drew from the literature. The first three should look familiar because these are ones that were used in the online trial. The last two were new, and the acts of kindness is a tried and true positive activity with lots of evidence behind it, where you basically ask people to do a number of acts of kindness all in a single day to really make it a potent kindness day for that person. And then we ask people to write down what they did, how it made them feel, and how the recipients of their kindness might have responded. And then the last one was an increasing pleasant activity. This is It may look, we have clinical psychologists on the phone. It may look familiar to you. This is a behavioral activation measure that's often used with depressed populations and has been used in veterans with a lot of success. But it's very much aligned with the positive psychology literature. And so this activity asks people to identify pleasant activities from a list that we provided them or come up with ones on their own. And then write down what they want to do over the next week and keep track of which days you did which positive activities. It's really to get people focused on doing the things that they love and being mindful about it. Now, a unique aspect of our VA research program on positive psychology is that we wanted to develop a very robust control group. So a lot of the positive psychology literature is in its early stages with regard to translating these things and testing them in populations with clinical diagnoses. And a lot of the existing literature so far has wait list controls or just simple pre-post tests without an active control. And so what I wanted to do was build a control group that a control program that really controls for everything except the positive nature of the events that we're asking people to do themselves. And so we pulled from the positive psychology basic science literature, we pulled neutral control activities that had been used in the development tests for all of those things that I mentioned before as positive activities have been validated in the literature by comparing their effects to the control activities you see here. So we, basically these are very similar in terms of duration and effort, but they don't have that positive affective component to it. So armed with this list of positive and neutral activities, we compiled both sets of activities into booklets that were written at about a sixth grade reading level, and we gathered feedback from a small sample of veterans who met our enrollment criteria that we were going to use in later tests, and that was they had symptomatic knee arthritis, and we were targeting people drawn from primary care settings in the VA. And they had to be at least 50 or older. We conducted semi-structured interviews with these veterans, asking them to review the instructions on their own, and then we asked them several questions about it, including would you be likely to complete each activity, and we probed trying to understand why or why not, and then we asked them how could the activity or instructions be improved, specifically looking for areas that were confusing or could perhaps be misunderstood in these interviews. We took the information that we learned from these semi-structured interviews and refined the activities. The overall response was very positive. We had veterans who wanted to sign up for the program right then and there, even though this was still a pilot refinement stage. Veterans indicated they would complete all the activities. We were able to find a number of things that we ended up streamlining and improving about the activities, including we ended up revising the entire booklet to be written at a fourth grade level as opposed to the sixth grade level. Some of the specific changes that we made, and these are the bigger differences from how these activities are traditionally presented to individuals in the other positive psychology literature, we found that savoring pleasures was often misunderstood to mean it only, it had to be food-related. And so we retooled the framing of this activity and the instructions to make it very clear that this was about making good moments last and really identifying things and really relishing good moments as opposed to, just good food. Although I will be the first to admit that a lot of my good moments involve really good food. So they're not totally mutually exclusive. We also changed the gratitude letter language because people were getting tripped up on the word gratitude. So we retooled the instructions for that to really get across the message that this is about expressing thanks to somebody who made a big impact on your life and you never got a chance to really share with them all of the ways that they made your life better. And we also revised the increasing pleasant activities behavioral activation activity to fit on two pages that had originally been three pages. And then we also provided examples for some of the activities. And again, this was to really open veterans' minds to the range of responses that are appropriate and welcome on these activities. So the final product was two booklets. One was the positive activities booklet and one was the control activities booklet with the names of the revised activities here. I just wanted to emphasize that the cover page and introduction were the same across both booklets. And again, this was to control for motivation, expectation, all of those things. And so the only thing that differed were the activities themselves. And this is the pilot study cover page and introduction that is used. And so I'll just briefly show that here, and it is available in the slides for those of who wanted to see it more closely. Just to give you an idea of how we laid this out, this is the Three Good Things activity. And so you'll see the instructions on the left, and then we framed it very we kept it to one page and made the entries for veterans very brief, just to get at the idea that you know, we're not asking people to write a book here. We just write down some keywords to get people thinking, and so we were very mindful about not making this feel like an overwhelming writing task. Here is the events that affect you. This was the parallel control program activity for the Three Good Things activity. And you'll see that the layout is almost identical to the other program. All right, so this brings me, that was our refinement phase. So I'm next going to move to phase two of our research program, which was the bigger pilot test of these new workbooks. We wanted to pilot test primarily for feasibility, acceptance, and to get some preliminary data on impact on pain and functioning in our target population. So the target sample was the same as those described in phase one, veterans with symptomatic knee or hip arthritis. We recruited patients for this phase through direct mailings and through brochures in primary care clinics. So the direct mailings we extracted from the VA medical records. Patients who met our very basic criteria, including age. We were looking for people who had diagnosed osteoarthritis using ICD-9 codes, and explained in the mailing that this was a study about using staying positive with arthritis, about using positive psychology to improve pain. And so we mailed patients those mailings, distributed brochures about the study around the facility. For people who expressed interest or contacted our study staff about getting more information from these direct mailings or brochures, we conducted a more in-depth telephone screening. Those who were eligible, we had them come in for an in-person baseline visit where we completed a baseline assessment, and then randomized them to either the control or positive program. We oriented them to their program booklet at that baseline visit and then sent them home with instructions to begin the first week's activity. We then set up a time to call patients each week for the next 6 weeks to administer a very brief adherence survey and to review the activity for the next week. After the sixth week, we followed up with them 1, 3, and 6 months later by telephone to readminister the baseline measures. Our outcomes that I want to feature here, the primary outcomes were pain and functioning assessed using the Western Ontario McMaster or WOMAC Osteoarthritis Index. Scores could range from 0 to 100 on both the pain and difficulty functioning subscales. We looked at both. And higher scores equal worse pain, so we're looking for declines on these measures. We also looked at secondary measures of well-being, including positive and negative affect and satisfaction with life. And these are very commonly assessed in the positive psychology literature, so we wanted to see how veterans fared on these, as well as our primary variables of interest, which were pain and functioning. We assessed adherence and engagement in a few ways. One is we simply counted the number of weekly calls completed. This intervention, even though we did our best to streamline it and keep it succinct, it was still a matter of getting patients into the baseline visit, 6 weekly calls, and then 3 follow-ups. You know, so we wanted to know how many times did the veterans even answer the phone during that 6-week intervention period. And then we also asked them on each of those calls, did they complete the activity for the last week? And so we counted how many activities participants said that they completed of those who answered the call. And then for those who answered the call and said they completed the activity, they also were asked to rate the benefit, enjoyment, and difficulty of each activity on 7-point Likert scales. So the main analyses for this pilot study included linear mixed models that were used to examine change in pain and function from baseline through 6 months. Here you see a snapshot of the sample demographics. A couple of things to highlight here. This sample was considerably older than those in our online study, but they were more aligned with the traditional veteran population. The mean age is 67 years. We only had about 16% or 7 individuals in this small sample of 42 people, which again is closer to being representative of the VA population. And then the education level of this group was considerably different, as 35% completed high school education or less. The clinical characteristics, I'm including here for completeness, but really I just wanted to highlight a couple of things. We had as many people who know the veteran population, our veterans had a number of comorbidities. The average number of comorbidity was 3.7. We had several who had a prior diagnosed anxiety or depressive disorder or reported being treated for an emotional disorder prior to our study. There were a number of other treatments that people were, we assessed self-reported other treatments, both pharmacological and non-pharmacological treatments that people were using at baseline, and you can see that they reported on average 1.8 pharmacological treatments and 2.2 non-pharmacological treatments. So this is a population that we're trying a number of other things other than just being in our study. And then the other thing I'll highlight is just that in keeping with our efforts to keep the activity instructions accessible to the veteran population, 100% of our sample in this pilot study actually scored in the range of having less than adequate health literacy on the measure we used for the study. What you see here is the adherence and engagement. So this gets at feasibility and acceptability of the program in this pilot study. I'm going to highlight a few things here. Focusing on the total sample, first of all, we saw that 78% of our sample completed greater or more than, or you know, either 5 or 6 of the follow-up calls. And then when we restricted it to people who completed the calls, how many said they actually did the activities, we had 64% of the veterans say that they did 5 of the 6 activities, which we thought for a 6-week intervention wasn't too bad. Then we also had them rate the perceived benefit, enjoyment, and difficulty. And again, this was on a 7-point scale. And so benefit and enjoyment were both at the high ends of the scale, which was a good thing for us. And then perceived difficulty was close to the low point of the scale. So people were rating these activities as being enjoyable, beneficial, and not difficult. And the ratings and adherence to the calls and activities did not significantly differ across our positive and control groups, which, again, we saw as a good sign. Okay, so next I'm going to share the primary outcomes from the pilot study. What you see here is the pain subscale plotted over our 4 time points, and then you see the corresponding test of the interaction between the treatment group and time. And you'll see that this interact, and then we also are sharing with you the effect size. So you'll see here that this p-value is p.08, so it didn't reach statistical traditional statistical significant level, but it does have a somewhat large effect size, and we do see this nice drop here graphically from the baseline to 1 month in the positive group, and that was not observed as in the control group. In the difficulty functioning measure, again, you see this nice big drop from in the functioning difficulty from baseline to 1 month in the positive group, and this is maintained through months 3 and 6. It's relatively flat among our control group. And again, the effect size for functioning was quite large. For our secondary outcomes, positive affect was kind of all over the place, and this was the one outcome that didn't even approach statistical significance, so I'm not going to dwell too much on that pattern. With negative affect, we saw a pattern similar to the pain and functioning where we saw a nice drop from baseline to 1 month in the positive group. It crept a little bit up to in months 3 and 6 month follow-up, but it didn't get back to where this group started at baseline. And that was a significant difference between the treatment and control groups. And finally, satisfaction with life. There was a significant interaction with between treatment group and time. You can see in our positive group, they started a little bit lower and jumped way up and then came a little bit down in months 3 and 6, but still higher than baseline, whereas our control group dipped from baseline to 1 month in terms of their satisfaction with life and then just started kind of easing back up in later months. And this was a statistically significant difference. All right, so summarizing the pilot results, what we have here, we were really excited that veterans with knee and hip arthritis were successfully recruited and retained. We were happy that the retention and ratings of activities were similar across the groups. And just to sum things up, compared to the control group, we found that the positive group showed significant improvement in self-reported functioning, non-significant improvement in self-reported pain, significant improvement in negative affect and life satisfaction, and really no difference in positive affect. Now, the limitations, this was, in fact, a pilot study. So it was one site, it was a very small sample, and it didn't get it at one thing that I really was interested in, and that was trying to understand, are there race differences in response to these activities? And we were also unable to look at gender differences, which also might be an important moderating variable, given that a number of the previous studies from positive psychology have had predominantly female samples. This brings me to phase 3 of this program of research, and this is this HSR&D-funded two-site trial called Staying Positive, an Intervention to Reduce Osteoarthritis Pain Disparities. We're in our final months of this project now, and for those who are interested, you can read the full study protocol that just came out in Contemporary Clinical Trials. I want to just really focus on the differences between the pilot study and the main study because much of the details are the same, but the main study is bigger. So with regard to sample size, the pilot study was 42 people. We've increased that to 360 based on power analyses to what we would need to detect clinically meaningful differences in pain, and clinically meaningful racial interactions to in response to the treatment. So we were powered to detect race interactions. And we included a second site for this study. We expanded to Philadelphia. A very big difference in terms of recruitment strategy was what I'm calling opt-in for screening versus opt-out for screening. I mentioned earlier that for the pilot study, those who contacted us after they received the mailing or picked up a brochure, we were only able to screen those who contacted us for further information. For the main study, the IRB rules for the central IRB were a little bit different than our local IRB, and so we were able to follow up with individuals much more broadly in the main study. So we were able to follow up for screening with anybody who did not tell us they don't want additional information about the study. And this did contribute to wildly successful recruitment and a much more, I think, representative sample of veterans. And then with regard to the workbooks, we gave it a cosmetic makeover. The color scheme for the workbook was completely redone. It looks a lot more like this red, white, and blue patriotic color scheme I'm using for today. We reordered some of the control activities so that they were more aligned with their parallel. We just realized after we completed the pilot study that two of the control activities were sort of mapped onto the wrong weeks of their parallel positive activity. We have no reason to think that that order would make any difference in the world, but I wanted to mention that that was a change between the studies. And then we made some minor tweaks to some of the examples, again, just to improve clarity and make sure veterans were clear about what we were after. What you see here is the consort chart for the bigger study. We mailed just over 5,000 people, and then a small number came into our screening pool by way of word of mouth or picking up a brochure. We ended up screening 839 for eligibility. A lot of the people that we mailed just flat out weren't interested for one reason or another. Several were unreachable. Many would cut us off before we could even get to the meat of the telephone screening by saying things like, I moved away and I don't get care at the VA anymore, or my shoulder is what hurts, it's not my knee. And in those cases, just to save burden on the participants and our staff, we categorized them as determined ineligible prior to the full screening. But those were the main reasons we didn't screen people fully after the mailing. Then we found after doing the full telephone screening that 488 met our eligibility criteria. Anybody who we were able to schedule and that they kept their appointments with us came in for the baseline visit and were randomized. And then we split these individuals equally. We stratified our recruitment by race, so we were making sure that we were filling in the white and black participants at about an equal rate. And then we stratified based on race, then we randomized into the control group and positive group. So we had 90 in each group, 90 white in each group and 90 African-American in each group. And you can see the follow-up rates ranged anywhere from a low of 71 to a high of, I think it's 83, at any given follow-up. So the study status is that the analyses are underway with the original target cohort. We wrapped up data collection on the original 360 late last year. This included 85 women. As I mentioned earlier, our recruitment strategy was very successful, and veterans were more enthusiastic about this participating in this study than I ever would have imagined. So we were able to recruit about 120, or well, actually, my mental math is terrible. Several more. We recruited above and beyond our original 360, and specifically trying to get as many women into our sample as possible so we could do some additional analyses looking at subgroups. And so we're preparing that data from the expanded cohort for additional analyses. So I did promise you some preliminary findings. I'm not going to give you any numbers today, really, but they say pictures are worth 1,000 words. So I'm going to draw some pictures from recent current events to bring you into what we are finding in our preliminary findings. What you see here is how we felt after we completed our pilot study. So we felt like we pretty much won the gold medal. Our effects looked fantastic. Veterans had nothing but great things to say about the program. And so we did our best to expand this to a bigger sample and see if the pilot study results held when we had a more inclusive group and a much larger group. And unfortunately, so far, this is how I'm feeling about the preliminary findings from our main study. I feel like we did everything right, but the results are not looking nearly as promising as what we found in our pilot study. So just in summary, we are finding that we did find small declines in pain and functional impairment from baseline through 6 months, but these our differences are not what I would be calling clinically significant, and they are not different by our treatment and control group or by race. And so I am in, we've been doing a lot of searching in our data to try to make sure all of our analyses are, are accurate and everything's coded correctly and we're looking at subgroups. But so far, it is not looking like our main study is going to repeat the big win of our pilot study. So I'm going to enter now into full-on Olympic commentator mode, which when somebody crashes and burns on the mountain like that, you got to know what happened. Is there anything that we can point to that may have explained these drastically differences in findings? So we've asked ourselves, did we have overly inclusive eligibility criteria? A main point, a goal of our main study was to allow a generalizable sample. And we did see that the main pain baseline was only around 50 on a 100-point scale. However, when we restricted analyses to those with a higher than median baseline pain, we still get the same kind of flat pattern of results. We've asked ourselves, was there non-adherence in the big trial? And the answer seems to be no. 66% entirely or partially completed at least 5 of the 6 activities. This was very similar to what we found in our pilot study. And when we restrict analyses to that 66%, we get pretty much the same kind of flat and or just very minor improvement over time, and they don't differ by race. We asked ourselves, were the activities too difficult for this sample? The mean difficulty ratings are exactly what we saw in the pilot. And we're starting to try to think about, are there benefits that weren't captured by our survey measures? So survey measures, are they just not capturing what's going on? And the reason we're thinking that this may be the case, at least for some people, is that we have a ton of anecdotal comments indicating that some veterans really liked the program, and I'm going to share some of those with you. So comments from the positive group were things like, at first I thought this program was a pain. As I started to do it, I saw that the point was not to be too depressed about the pain. It's easy to get down when you're hurting, but it's good to notice that nice things are still happening in life. Another participant said, glad it helped me a little with the pain. I used less medication, which is, I think, a big win. Most of the things with the study are keeping me positive. Most of the things I did, I've been doing, but now I pay attention to them. It not only has been beneficial to me, but to my family, too. I enjoyed being in it. And then we had several people make comments like this, that they just really said there needs to be more programs like this. So these are comments from the positive group that make me think that there was value in this, even though our survey data are not necessarily showing it. However, I am also starting to learn that we really succeeded in making a very strong control group because we've gotten a lot of positive comments from the control group as well. So somebody said, I enjoyed this whole study. I enjoyed it very well, and I think it benefited me. I feel pretty great, and I think being positive is a big factor in health. I think it has helped a lot with the pain. I don't have as much pain as when the study started. The activities are good to take your mind off the pain. And then another individual said, I think I've become a little more attentive to my arthritis. I do the most positive things I can and try to enjoy them. I would recommend this to someone else. And then my personal favorite quote, which I think of every time I look at our survey data, whoever thought of this is a genius. I like to think that somebody, the veterans are benefiting from this, even if our surveys are not showing it. So the next steps for this program of research, we are finalizing and plan to publish our main outcomes based primarily on the survey data. I think it's important when trials don't go the way that pilot studies go. It's really important to be responsible and get that data out there so the field can try to figure out what to do next. We are planning to conduct gender comparisons with the expanded cohort, And we continue to analyze open-ended comments to identify where additional cultural adaptations to positive activities might be needed to bring the benefits to veterans. All right, I tried to leave a little bit of time for questions. I thank you for your attention, and I'd be happy to answer questions if there are any.
Thank you, Dr. Hausman. This is a great presentation, and we do have some questions in a little bit of time. You know, and this question came in early before we heard the results of your main study, which was asking about how those control activities might be actually activating interventions. And I'm sure you've done some thinking about this. You know, in particular, when I saw them, I just kept thinking about the work by James Pennebaker about, you know, writing down experiences and how that changes people's emotional well-being. So I was curious, I'm sure the audience is, about your thoughts about those control activities.
Yes, that's a great question, and it is something that we took into consideration. And it is possible that the control activities were activating, and it may be especially true for veterans who are struggling with pain and have a lot going on in their lives. And we've got I've had a lot of discussions with my team, who the individuals who were, you know, collecting data and administering both the intervention and control programs to patients. And they shared with me that, you know, some veterans have so much going on that it feels good to just have a plan and do something. And it doesn't really matter what it is. It, as long as there's a goal and the goal is reached, that could be, you know, a positive thing for them. So I do recognize that's the case. What I am not sure how to explain is sort of the flatness of our study measures. So if it was really that both the positive and the control conditions were equally activating and beneficial, then I would have expected more improvements over time in both conditions. And what we see is more of a kind of a maintenance or status quo. Now, I am wishing in retrospect that we would have had the funding to do just a no treatment control, and so we could see if you know, everybody out there is really just getting worse, but the people who do either the control or the program are staying strong and, you know, not degrading. Unfortunately, we don't have that because we weren't able to have three study conditions in our funded trial.
Mm-hmm. Did you have some veterans who were, for lack of a better word, kind of curmudgeons, who didn't buy into this, didn't want to do this positive psychology stuff, or veterans who, you know, were really catastrophizing types and catastrophized their pain?
Yeah, so we absolutely did have some curmudgeons, so yes, we did. And I would say some of the curmudgeons we converted, like the quote I had on the first quote on the from the positive group, straight up said, "I thought this program was a pain," and not in his knee. But then they kind of come around to it. And I think that the fact we were very intentional about how we placed the activities within the program, and the fact that we made it 6 weeks long, we were very careful to frame both in our recruitment materials and our informed consent materials, and at the baseline visit, we made it very clear that we don't expect everyone to like or benefit from all of the activities. But these are all activities that have shown benefit for others, and we won't know who it benefits in the VA population unless people try it. So we ask people to keep an open mind, try them all. You'll know at the end of the study whether you like them or not. And we did a significant amount of coaching with our team of interventionists and study staff to really make it clear, you know, to make sure that they were ready to deal with the full range of enthusiasm, ranging from very, very resistant up through super excited. And so I think, but it is about how you frame it, frame the activities and kind of just being open with veterans about this may not be your thing, but you signed on to the study and you might as well try it. And there's no harm in trying it, to see if you like it. And some people did come around at the end.
Mm-hmm. Somebody asked, was it correct that there was a difference, age difference in the two samples, that the first one was mid-40s and the second one was 70 years old, and maybe that had something to do with the differences?
So that's a great question. And so far, because the two samples were so different, I imagine they're talking about the online trial, which came from the general population of online users, and that was an average age of about 46. And then our average age of veterans was 67. So we were absolutely reaching a much older audience in the VA, and that could be one of many factors that dampened the response. And I would have to go back to the literature and specifically look at the various age ranges, because I do think that this is something that has been tested much more broadly in younger populations than who we are used to seeing and treating in the VA.
So I'm just going to wrap up, but I did have one other question about whether you're willing to share your manual or booklet, but I'm kind of assuming at this point that you want to be doing more work on this and refine things before you're ready to disseminate it. Is that correct?
Yeah, so this is one of those cases where I would love to have an interactive discussion with those on the call, because I am assuming that a lot of people tuned in for this because they want something like this for veterans. And I would love for it to get used, but at the same time, I do feel like we need to be careful about putting things out there that don't have really strong evidence that it's in the form that it needs to be in to benefit people. So I'm continuing to think about ways to move forward with this, but I'm also interested in hearing from those on the call. You can reach me, my email's here. I'm interested in hearing from folks who, despite the lackluster preview I've given you of the survey findings, is this something that pain specialists or primary care providers think is worth taking another shot at revising this and getting it into a format that veterans do, that we can demonstrate using more traditional survey measures positive benefits for.
Thank you, Dr. Hausman. This was a great presentation. I want to thank our audience for tuning in today and responding with some great questions that made for a really interesting conversation. Just one more reminder to hold on for another minute or two for the feedback form. If you're interested in downloading the PowerPoint slides from today, please go to the reminder email you received this morning and you'll see the link to the presentation. If you're interested in downloading slides from any of our past sessions, if you simply do an internet search on VA Cyber Seminars Archive, you can use the filters to find any of our previous seminars. You'll also be receiving an email with your certificate of attendance for today's session. Our next cyber seminar will be held on Tuesday, April 3rd, and we'll be sending out registration information about the 15th of the month. I want to thank everyone for attending this HSR&D Cyber Seminar, and we hope that you'll join us again in the future.